Hey, everyone, and welcome to Seriously Risky Business, the podcast we do here at Risky Biz HQ, which is all about government policy and big trends and all of that fun stuff. My name is Patrick Gray. And every week in Seriously Risky Business, we sit down with Tom Uren and talk about his newsletter. We sit down, we do the edit, and then we have this conversation about it. And we would like to thank our founding corporate sponsor, Proofpoint, and also the cyber initiative at the Hewlett Foundation for supporting this work. Tom, nice to see you.
G'day, Pat. How are you?
Good, good. And so the first thing we're going to talk about this week is the so-called restricting the emergence of security threats that risk information and communications technology act. It's one of those ridiculous American backronyms because all of that winds up spelling restrict. Well done for the mouthful. But let's talk about the Restrict Act. Funnily enough, I've seen, you know, news reports about this act and all of them have written it up as a law that's designed to combat the risk that comes from TikTok. And you've written a very long piece of analysis here that says that's not what this law is really about. I mean, it can be applied to TikTok, but that's not what it is.
Yeah, that's right. So I'd like to say it's a long but extremely readable piece of analysis.
Yeah. No, that wasn't faint praise. Don't worry.
And so the bills... One interesting thing I found is that it names six specific adversaries, and it actually names them as foreign adversaries: China, Russia, Iran, North Korea, Cuba, and Venezuela. And so when it comes to the supply chain and ICT, really, there's only one country you really, really care about, and that's China.
Do you think they threw the other five in there so that China wouldn't have a tanty? You know, wouldn't have a tantrum about being the only one.
No, I don't think so. I think the US is a lot less afraid of naming China as an adversary. And so I would be extremely surprised if this appeared in Australian legislation, that it named China as, and that's the words they use, foreign adversary. But I think the US is like, yeah, we'll just name them. And Russia, like you can see, given Kaspersky antivirus from a few years ago, that seems fair enough. They've got a bigger... Yeah. IT industry. Iran, North Korea. North Korea, they do have those software development teams that sell commercial software development. So I guess
that's true.
There's reasons, right? But anyway.
Yeah, no, I get it. But it is interesting here, and you just hit on one interesting thing there, which was the Kaspersky thing, right? And there wasn't really much, you know, when the Kaspersky controversy was raging, there wasn't all that much that the United States could do. Like, it didn't really have a mechanism if it wanted to put serious conditions on the company or restrict its sale, to business in the United States. And that's really what this act is about giving the government some authorities to regulate foreign tech in the country. Because, you know, I think there's an assumption out there among normal people that, you know, the US government could just decide to ban a product from the market and that would be that. But it's not really how it works.
Yeah, so the Mark Warner, so one of the chief co-sponsors of the legislation, mentioned Kaspersky. He mentioned Huawei and TikTok and said this is an ongoing trend. And I guess the way I think about it is we've moved from a world where we thought, people just want to sell products and they'll do the right thing and states won't get involved, maybe, I guess, 8 years or a decade ago, to now a world where very clearly states do get involved in their products. And definitely the PRC, China, has the tools to compel companies to do things. And so the worry is that they will use one of their companies in a way that's inimical against the interests of the US or allies or us or whatever.
Oh, and it's a reasonable fear.
Yeah, yeah. And I think people have woken up to that fear and they've realized that, well, we've muddled through in all these other cases, Kaspersky, Huawei, using other authorities and regulations. Like for Huawei, it was kind of telco regulations. But what I like about this bill is that it says, Department of Commerce, Secretary of Commerce, go away and think up a framework and procedures and processes for dealing with this. And I think that goes a long way to telling foreign companies that there's some sort of process that you have to go through. And it kind of acts as a form of deterrence rather than
Well, now we have a lever, so if we catch you doing bad stuff, we're going to pull it, right? Yeah. And that's all I was getting at before with the normal person comment, right? Is I think people just assumed this lever already existed and it just didn't, right? So
yeah.
All in all, it looks like pretty sensible legislation.
Yeah, yeah. And what struck me is quite a long time ago, Fergus Ryan, who works at the Australian Strategic Policy Institute, we were talking about TikTok, and he said... I was talking about whether it should be banned, and his comment at the time was the threat of banning should definitely be on the table. And when you've got that threat, it's there, it's present. I mean, you can see how far TikTok has tried to bend over backwards to satisfy concerns. And I think that means that, well, last week we talked about cranes at ports, and I think having this kind of lever gives you some way that you can get some more insight into like software development practices or whatever you need really to make yourself feel better about having those products.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. I mean, and as you pointed out previously, you know, they could deal with Huawei through things like sanctions over their dealings with Iran and, you know, telco regulations and stuff like that, because obviously where most of this gear goes is, you know, heavily regulated environments already. But when it comes to just, you know, like a social media app that goes on someone's phone, you know, it's or an antivirus thing that you buy in a plastic wrapped box at Best Buy, you know, like that lever hasn't been there, and that's what it is.
Yeah, and it gives the Department of Commerce particular powers so they can get companies to answer questions. They can.
But is there actually going to be a ban authority as part of this?
Yeah, up to including a ban. So it's got everything there. You can find information. You can make decisions. The plan is to have a process where you think about it. And I think that would be great.
I mean, I'm very sad that I'm going to be deprived of the best social media technology to come out of Iran, North Korea, Cuba, and Venezuela. You never know where innovation is going to take root. But no, I mean, it is interesting that China does have, you know, a real tech ecosystem these days. I mean, Xi is not doing a wonderful job of fostering it and, you know, helping it grow. But, you know, certainly I would expect we will see more TikToks, right? And it's probably time to get ready.
Well, I like you joke about technology from Iran and North Korea. I think the whole point of this is to try and manage that risk. So if, you know, a wonderful North Korean social media platform arose, the point of the legislation is to be able to say, right, okay, this is actually a good product, but what are the risks and how do we mitigate them? And if you don't mitigate them, North Korean developer, here's a ban at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I still think that's unlikely.
Yeah, me too. But let's see if the next thriving social media company comes out of North Korea. I mean, you know, that would be kind of awesomely funny and something that we could spend a bit of time on. Now, look, you've done another write up here. You've taken a look at a draft law in Cambodia, which is a cybersecurity law, which experts, rest of world, wrote this up, right? And experts have looked at this law and said that it could be abused to reinforce Hun Sen's grip on power. You know, Hun Sen is essentially a dictator in Cambodia. And what's funny is you've looked at this law, which authorizes them in the case of, you know, a cyber event, the government can basically tell people to do anything that it wants. And you've kind of pointed out that there are similar laws already in Australia, right? So where you kind of land on this is it's okay for democratic countries with strong oversight to have some of these broad authorities, even if it's controversial. Like it's, you know, it's more okay in Australia than it is in Cambodia, because general governance is really an important factor when you're looking at whether a law is sane or not. So I found this a really interesting write-up.
Yeah, so Rest of World's a wonderful little publication, and there's often really interesting tech stories from around the rest of the world that you just don't hear about. So they got an unreleased draft version, so someone gave it to them, and it's quite all-encompassing. If the cybersecurity threat is bad enough, basically government entities can do all sorts of things that sound bad when you're worried about the government. And I mean, this is basically exactly the same as Australian security of critical infrastructure laws,
yeah,
which are if the incident is bad enough, the minister can just say to the organization, you have to do these things And
yeah,
we're going to...
Yeah, I mean, you've got the quote here, and it's a very famous one here. The Home Affairs Minister can compel a critical infrastructure organisation, and here's the quote, to do or refrain from doing a specified act or thing. Now, what's funny about this is the way that this came about, right? Because we had the ASD director, Rachel Noble, some time ago telling a parliamentary committee hearing about a ransomware incident at a critical infrastructure provider, right? And they heard about it through the press. And then they went to them for information. They kind of got stonewalled. They wouldn't let ASD help. They finally mopped up the incident and they got hit again 3 months later. And basically, you know, it's a little bit different to how things work in the United States. I think the attitude to government here is a bit different. And, you know, long story short, this is how you wind up with a law
that
says
right.
that the Home Affairs Minister can direct a critical infrastructure provider to do whatever the hell it says yep. is because, yes, you have misused your freedoms and we are taking them away from you.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So that incident, it's not clear exactly who they're talking about. There's really strong suspicions that it was a particular company and it occurred at the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. And so
who was it? What's the rumor you've heard?
Toll Holdings.
Oh, of course. Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they were involved in sort of vaccine distribution and stuff, I think for flu vaccines and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it there was that conflation of logistics problems with COVID-19 and also
for those listening from outside of Australia, Toll is a very big logistics and courier company.
So that's the rumor, unconfirmed. Toll's not sure about
it. No, that makes sense. I believe it.
So the dynamics of just business are that you do sometimes get these incentives to not tell government for whatever reason. Or you could have all sorts of reasons why you don't want to tell government. And in Australia's case, they're just not happy about that happening.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I think
not having
when it comes to critical infrastructure, there's good reason, right?
I mean, I can tell you right now that there's a lot of people in the sort of US policymaking environment that listen to this podcast and they're sitting there dreaming, you know, daydreaming about being able to pass an authority like that in America.
And what makes sense...
It'll never happen, but yeah, go on.
ASD has information that it collates about all sorts of ransomware actors and their procedures and how they operate, right? So they've got something they can bring to the table. The company or firm should know their network well, and so ideally you want to merge those two sets of knowledge, and government, I guess, in this case feels that like we just couldn't play in that party, and so therefore we need a law. And so
yeah,
there's a justification.
It's pretty easy to draw a straight line
yep.
from an event to that law, which is broad, but is there for a reason. Whereas now when we contrast that with the Cambodian law, obviously we're going to look at that with a lot more suspicion because of the way the place is governed and the fact
yeah.
that the president or prime minister or whatever has been in power since like 1985.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The phrase in power in one form or another.
Yes, yeah.
which I think tells you something. And so the worry is that Cambodia is far more worried about staying in power than actually about cybersecurity. And so yeah. the law will be used for those.
Regime protection, not critical infrastructure
yeah.
protection,
yeah.
right? And this is
yeah.
this dovetails nicely with another thing that you've got in the newsletter this week, which is just a short item. But the Carnegie Endowment has a new report on China manipulating international technical standards at these, you know, through these various standards processes. But like we do that, the West does that, right? So when China does it, it's bad. But when we do it, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of okay. And this is the same as that Cambodia situation where when Australia passes a law like that, it's okay. When Cambodia does, it's not. And I think there actually is something to that, right? Which
so
is
what are the
yeah,
what are
on.
The standards that you think we've manipulated?
Oh, I don't know, man. I mean, there was a whole bunch of stuff in the Snowden leaks about how, you know, various encryption standards had been kind of weakened by NSA. I don't even know if I believe it, but that was the, you know, that was the prevailing thought.
So without confirming or denying any of that stuff that may or may not have gone on, because I don't know, what struck me as you were talking is that is narrowly focused on, and if it happened, is narrowly focused on enabling some sort of intelligence production, right?
Mm.
And so the concern with the Carnegie report is that there's several cases that have been documented where all Chinese participants are told to vote for a particular proposal.
Yeah, right.
And one was for Huawei, for example. And so that's a kind of similar to the cyber espionage, where we believe it should be focused on government and military, and the Chinese are very happy to think of economic advantage as a national security risk. And so I think that's that could be a similar...
Well, it's not a risk, it's an imperative, but I get what you mean. But standards, like, why are they trying to push them through, right? I get that they're being directed, and that's a different thing. Like, the US government doesn't just direct all of their IETF members to, you know, who are citizens to vote a certain way. Why are they trying to get certain standards passed? Do they enable broad-based surveillance? Is it just commercially useful to Huawei to be setting some of these standards? Like, what's the end game here, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Yeah, so I think that it's not clear from the report. So I think there's several documented examples. Mostly it found that it's not very widespread. So it had happened, and often it wasn't successful. So there's this interesting dynamic the report brings out, where if a standard doesn't match what the herd of stakeholders need, they'll actually just abandon it and go and do their own thing. So that's bad, because you want standards, because standards are like a public good. My suspicion is that sometimes the standards are manipulated to bolster indigenous companies. So if they have a global standard, other companies have to join it. So it's much... I've heard for a long time that this is happening, and I was always a bit skeptical that it would be that effective. And I think this report, to me, I really liked it, because it made it much clearer what is actually going on. And so I thought it was worth reading if you're interested in global standards setting procedures, for that reason, that it made it clear that there is a problem. It's not as bad as people can make it out to be, and we should still do something. And basically the do something is you should just make it easier for your experts to participate. And so often experts participate as a labor of love rather than for any other reason. And so the Chinese state makes it easy for their experts to participate by supporting them. Perhaps we should do the same.
Yeah, but I mean, they're supporting them so they get the vote, right?
Right.
So, the central allegation here is that the government in China is directing the way people should vote.
Yeah, so that's happened at times. Mm. The thrust of the report is really, this is the way it is, and this is the problem, and this is what we should do. It doesn't actually strongly focus on the manipulation. It tries to draw the whole picture, which is why I liked it.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, anyone who wants to follow any of this up, you can subscribe to Tom's newsletter at risky.biz/subscribe and find the Substack link for Seriously Risky Business. Mate, a pleasure to chat to you as always, and I'll look forward to doing it again next week.
Thanks, Pat.